I'd like you to turn in your Bibles, please, to John chapter 1, and we'll read the verses I read last week, verses 1 through 5, as well as the next verses. We'll read through verse 18. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through him, and apart from him, nothing came into being that has come into being. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not comprehend it. There came a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify about the light, so that all might believe through him. He was not the light, but he came to testify about the light. There was the true light, which coming into the world enlightens every man. He was in the world, and the world was made through him, and the world did not know him. He came to his own, and those who were his own did not receive him. But as many as received him, to them he gave the right to become children of God, even to those who believe in his name, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we saw his glory, glory as of the only begotten from the Father, full of grace and truth. John testified about him and cried out, saying, "This was he of whom I said, 'He who comes after me has a higher rank than I, for he existed before me.' For of his fullness we have all received, and grace upon grace. For the law was given through Moses, grace and truth were realized through Jesus Christ. No one has seen God at any time. The only begotten God who is in the bosom of the Father, he has explained him." The word of the Lord. When a sponge has absorbed its maximum capacity of liquid, and I'm sure many of you are getting acquainted with your sponges again, cleaning up before or after the holidays and everybody coming and going. But when a sponge has absorbed all the water that it can, you can touch it anywhere and fluid will just gush out of it. These 18 verses in the first chapter of John have absorbed the maximum capacity of revealed truth. They are chock full. If you touch any verse in this passage, it will gush truth that is worth thinking about and worth discussing. The word that is repeated 6 times in the first 13 verses is the word light. The terms light and word are names that John gives to the anointed one, the Messiah, Jesus Christ. In the beginning was the Word. And last week we thought about that, and we compared the beginning of John's gospel to the beginning of the book of the Genesis, of the beginning of all things in human history. In the beginning was the Word, and in him was life, and the life was the light of men. The Word spoke the life that was in him out into the void, and that life animated all creation and became light to humankind. Thought last week, I remarked on the fact that all of matter, the wood that this podium is made of, the trees, the ground, the air that we breathe, everything that of our material universe was made out of nothing. But our life was not made out of nothing. Our life is a gift to us from God. It comes out of God as an expression of his love, and it is shared in his creation. That's not out of nothing. It comes out of God Himself. The Word spoke the light, life that was in Him out into the void. And that life animated all creation. And it became a light to all humankind. Now, we experience light as human beings in two ways. And this is a great sanctuary to talk about light. It's like the thing I love most about this sanctuary is our southern exposure that's up above the tree or the house lines. We get lots of sun here. It's wonderful. And we experience light in two ways. It warms us and it illuminates objects to our sight. The light, which is Jesus Christ, has two similar qualities, which John describes at the very end of the chapter in verse 14, saying that Jesus was full of grace and truth. Grace is the favor and the loving kindness of God. It creates joy and peace. The light, which is Jesus Christ, appears as grace to us. It is the fountainhead of our salvation. Grace is the warming power of the light of God in Jesus Christ. Truth is the integrity and the excellence of God observed in His character and expressed in His word and in all of His actions and His purposes. He is the measure of true life, love, and joy. And when He expresses Himself, there is no hypocrisy. There is no hidden deceit. When God says a thing, there isn't some secret dark pocket within Himself that really doesn't mean it, that really wants it to be something else. That purity, that integrity that is, He is 100% all the way through, is His holiness. It is life-giving. It is powerful. It is what we are being saved into. Truth is the illuminating power of the light of God in Jesus Christ. And this is the light of God, the illumination of truth and the warmth of grace. There is no hiding from the revealing truth of God's light. We all want to seek truth. It's great on a bumper sticker. It's not so great when it looks into your soul like a searchlight. And it sees everything that is there. And not only does God see it, but we can't help but see it. When God reveals us to ourselves, it's something, generally speaking, we don't welcome. We have worked hard, unconsciously and subconsciously and sometimes consciously, not to see certain aspects of our life. But the truth of God knows that it must reveal all things as they truly are if there is ever to be any healing, if there is ever to be any transforming. The closer we come to God, the more His light reveals about how sin has deformed and crippled and demeaned and corrupted us. It reveals the sins that we despise, that makes us despise ourselves. And it reveals the sins that we love, the ones that we can't bear to part with. All of it revealed by His love, His revealing truth. It shows us how God sees us, which is to say, it shows us how we really and truly are. There's no hiding from the revealing truth of God's light, but the warmth of His grace, the grace of His light means that there's no need to hide. There's no need to pretend that what you don't want to be true inside isn't. Or to make worse yet, to waste your time and to waste your own integrity, what little of it we have, trying to explain it away, or worse yet, even still, just to say it's not there. We don't need to hide because God's grace means that whatever he finds, as terrible as it is, can be redeemed, can be put to death, and then resurrected. We are put to death with his death, and we are resurrected into his life and made new into something we can't imagine. God will wash off the mess that we've made. He'll heal the brokenness, and he'll break the power of sin over us. Verses 12 to 13 tell us what coming into the light of Jesus Christ means. And take a look at 12 and 13. But as many as received him, to them he gave the right to become children of God, even to those who believe in his name, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. What is God doing when we walk into the light of Jesus Christ, when the truth and the grace of Jesus Christ reveals us and would heal us? What is God doing when we walk into that light and we stand there and we ask God to save us? We read that as many as received him, to them he gave the right to become children of God. Underline that verse if you don't have it underlined already. Put a star there or something. It's a powerful promise that God gives. First, we read that God gave. Nothing in this passage suggests that we have done anything to earn what God gives. What God does, he does because he wants to bless us out of his love. What he gives is a gift from the life that is in him. As we will see, it is not that we do nothing, far from it. It is that what we do neither earns nor purchases nor in any way deserves that gift. If a millionaire comes up to me to give me his Rolls Royce and he asks a dollar for it, that may be the dollar, only dollar I have, or the pocket change that I have. It may be all that I have, but it certainly isn't enough to purchase that car. God asks for us to give him ourself, all that we have, all that we are, but it's pocket change compared to the wealth that he's offering. Second, we see that God gave the right. He gave us status, even if he didn't give us all the power that we want or think of when we think of being sons of God. He gave us status and not power at the beginning. We have the status of children in his family, though we do not yet own the spiritual integrity or the holiness of the Father. God in his wisdom knows what we would do. Well, it's what we always do with power. We destroy things. We exploit things. We take things over. God gives us the right. He gives us a status in his family, even though we do not yet own the spiritual integrity or the holiness of our Father. It's like being accepted to if you always desired to go to Yale or to Harvard and you worked hard all through high school, unlike me, and you applied and you received a letter of acceptance from the school that you wanted most to be in. Once you get that letter of acceptance, you are part of the school. In the minute you receive that letter. But before you enjoy the full benefits of being an alumni, of being someone who is truly blessed and accredited by that school, there is a process that will challenge and change how you think and greatly expand what you know before you get that diploma. Our future in Jesus Christ, believing and trusting in him, is sure. Our place in God's family is granted. God's work in us starts the minute He adopts us. And we will start to see some of its blessing right here and right now in this life. But there's more to come. The changes that will grant us the complete freedom from sin and the intimate unity with the heart and the mind and the person of God the Father is a promise that is yet to be fulfilled. It is coming. It is beginning to happen. And when it does, when it is completed, it will be fantastic. It will be beyond anything, truly. And this is one of the hard parts about it. We can't imagine it. So we don't know what we're holding out for. We can see the concrete pleasures of the world around us and of our own plans and our own desires for our heart. But we have only the merest hint of an idea of what is coming. It's, again, I think that an analogy of a fetus in the womb, there's a lot of similarities with our life here and now. A fetus in the womb has no idea of the lights and the sounds and the tastes and the textures that are awaiting it. It has some of those things while it's in the womb. It's alive, and it has some of that sense, but it's all muted beyond belief, and some of it is hardly even there. I think that's how it is for us right now. We are waiting on something that is beyond anything we can imagine. But God has adopted us. He has adopted us as children. And the Greek word there is technon. It's not gender specific. It's we are children. We are not adopted. In this passage in John, he reserves the word, the Greek word, huios, which is son. He reserves that word for Jesus only. We are not adopted as sons of God, but as children of God. Now, in other places, that word is used. But in this, and John is making the point that if he were to call us sons, and remember, it was a patriarchal society, if he were to call us sons, it would stress authority and power that we do not yet possess. Sonship in John is reserved for Jesus, the Word, the life, and the light. He has finished his labor of love and is now seated in full authority as the Son with the Father. We are children. We bear the family name and we share in its future. And as we grow, we begin to resemble our Father. And like any good father, he begins to share some of his authority with us to teach us to use it. Like children, we know we have a long way to go before we can truly be like our Father. And we learn with difficulty sometimes to be patient and to stay teachable. You read verse 13 again. Who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. Like Jesus, our rebirth includes some divine spiritual genetics. The incarnation of God in Jesus Christ is a miracle without parallel in creation history. But the involvement of God, not only in the creation of the first people, but in the recreation, in the birth of every believer, is a miracle cut from the same cloth as the incarnation itself. Second only to Jesus Christ, the coming, the rebirthing, the transforming of us is the greatest miracle in creation. So what is our part? The fact is that we do not deserve, we do not purchase, we cannot barter for our salvation, but that doesn't mean that we have no part to play in it. In verses 12 and 13 again, what words? Take a look at verse 12 and 13. What words are there that are a direction or a command to us? We are to receive. Now, first of all, what are we to receive? Not a gift, not a promise, not a power. We're to receive Him. Big difference. God is not just giving us the keys to the family car so that we can hop in it and run off at full speed, going wherever we wanted to go to do whatever we want to do. God is calling us to receive Him. And that's much bigger. It's a much bigger deal. We're not receiving just laws and rules and regulations. Those are all things that teach us how to draw near to Him, how not to push Him away, or worse yet, how not to deaden our own spirit to the presence of God. He is bigger than that. His heart and His mind are the end purpose of everything that we could ever want. We receive Him, and we believe in His name. And what does it really mean? I mean, we hear that, believe in His name. You know, that kind of religious stuff goes around in our head, and we think we have some idea what it means, but we never really think about it. What does it mean to believe in His name? A name, of course, is much more important in this day and age. And when you believe in someone's name, it means that you believe in everything that that name and that person stands for. It means that His purpose and His will, represented by His name, is your purpose. It is the will that you seek. And finally, God gives us life so that we might become His children, so that we might be part of a process that is building us up to a point where we will be brought one more time into the baptism of death and resurrection, and we're going to come out something like we just have never imagined, to stand in the presence of God. So we are to receive, to believe, and become. Receiving is a verb. It's an action, even if it is passive. We accept the gift that God offers, and it is nothing less than God Himself. We believe, and that is also an action. It is a response to God's initiative that is more active than just receiving. There's more willful effort involved in it. It involves a search. What is God's will? And God doesn't make that easy, does He? Never does. It's a process. And why? Because learning in the process is every bit as important. And the transformation that God's Spirit is doing in your spirit as you're dealing with your impatience and your frustration and your false starts and your deep desire to do something with your life, God is changing who you are. And that's part of the process. In believing, we exercise our trust in the person of God, not just gratitude for His blessing. Receiving accepts a gift. Believing trusts the giver of the gift even before He gives it. God meets our growing belief or trust in Him with new blessings, which we in turn turn into deeper trust and more willingness to believe in Him. So the process is a chain reaction. It's a cyclical process. The process begins all over again, and the outcome of this process of trusting and believing, blessed, and then trusting more and believing, all of it yields intimacy with God. Each time the process renews itself, we find that our relationship with God grows deeper and His influence in our life reaches out further and further. And if the idea of intimacy with God and if the idea of believing in His name as I've described it here doesn't excite you, if it's kind of like, if in a moment of honesty you're willing to say, you know, I can't say that that gets me up in the morning. I can't say that I feel like that makes a lot of my decisions for me, then for the love of God, pray about that, because you're missing out. When we get to the point where honestly that, remember the prodigal son story and the elder brother who was so upset with his father for taking his idiot brother back after he'd done what he always did, which was disrespect his father, do nothing to help around the farm, take all the money and go off and waste it and then come back, hat in hand, and dad forgives him. At this point, the son is answered by the father. The son is upset, and he's upset with his father, and his father comes and says, what's the matter with you? Your brother has come back. And he says, well, I don't get this. I work all my life and I sweat hard to do what is right and I follow the rules. And here your son who goes out and belittles your name, it spits in your face and spends everything you give him, turns himself into a wreck. And you kill the fatted calf and throw a party for him. And what does God answer him? My son, you've always had me. He's always been there. And you can tell that the elder son is saying, well, big freaking deal. So I've got dad. Well, that's a special. It doesn't mean anything to him. It doesn't mean anything to him because his whole life, he's been working for himself. He's been doing the duty. He's been doing the right thing, and he's dead in it because there's no love there. There's no intimacy between him and his father. So if you feel that way about your spiritual walk right now, if you need a boost, then start praying about it because it's the way of death. It needs to change, and you can't change it. I'll relieve you of that burden right now. Nothing you can do will change it. You can just open yourself up. Open every door and window in your life that give you time and opportunity for God to tell you to do something and join him in something, to reveal something to you. Spend some time, real time, in prayer. And even if it's just sitting there with your mouth shut for 10 minutes, just because you want what God has, you don't even know what it is, so you don't know how to even ask for it. And wait on him to bring peace, to wait on him to sharpen your appetite for the real food. It's important. When we faithfully receive and believe and receive, we become children of God. Becoming children of God is still entirely dependent on God's empowerment and God's initiative. We must never try to get out ahead of God in this. Getting out ahead of God is what brought sin and death into our lives in the first place. But becoming children of God, becoming is a process that means that we participate in the family business, in the family mission, which is the salvation of this world. We grow to do God's work as he directs it, with him and in his power. More than any of the other gospel authors, John emphasizes what Jesus taught regarding our participation in the mind and ministry of the Father. Later in John's gospel, John reports Jesus is the only one who reports that Jesus uses the word friend to describe the end result of successful discipleship. We are becoming children and friends of God if we stay faithful in the process of receiving and believing and receiving. If we don't take God's blessings and say, thanks God, appreciate this, and then take off and go in our own direction without a thought to what God's intentions are.